which, you know, is I would believe, having met him and talked to him, is a massive detriment to the education system in Charlottesville.
Wow. All right. Again, remind us how we can see this photograph and follow your work, Zach.
I'm on Twitter at ZD Roberts. You can go to visu.news or truthout.org or gregpalace.com. Greg wrote up a story about it with me. I've written a couple versions of the story as well, with different levels of information as I've gotten it. But you can go to any of those sites.
Okay,
and also,
well,
Nation of Change has all of my kind of backstories on Charlottesville. And as always, you can always double check, you know, go to gregpalace.com. We've got videos and everything like that of interviews with
DeAndre.
Right,
Zach, we thank you for doing the good work and for being in the right place at the right time and having the courage to raise your camera to that Nazi, because you could have saved a life there. Who knows? Thanks for being with us on Flashpoints.
Thanks. Have a good night.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of All the Rage, Thursday, October 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. All the Rage is a documentary that explores the work of physician Dr. John Sarno and his radical methods to treating back pain. Through the interviews with Sarno, patients, and experts, the film offers a profound rethink of how we approach our health care. Again, that's All the Rage, Thursday, October 12th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Passport to Empowerment, Saturday, October 14th at the North Warehouse in Portland. Passport to Empowerment is Green Empowerment's 20-year anniversary party that brings together Portland's international development, sustainability, and social justice leaders for a tour of Green Empowerment's history of renewable energy and water projects in remote villages. The event features keynote speaker Christine Irvin, Peruvian food, drinks, music and dance performances, an auction, dancing, and more. Again, that's Passport to Empowerment, Saturday, October 14th at 1 p.m. at the North Warehouse, 723 North Tillamook Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And coming up next, it's the Dirtbag. Glenn and Jim are in there ready to talk to you about a couple of things, including the Home Orchard Society's All About Fruit Show. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, From Our Hands to Yours, celebrating 44 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods and international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
Well, here we are, Jimbo, the second Wednesday at 11 o'clock.
And typical Oregon weather.
You've tuned in to The Dirtbag, a show that deals almost exclusively with edible plants. This is Glenn Andreessen, here beside you now until 12 noon, and beside me, Jim Gilbert.
It's nice to be here again, Glenn.
Yeah, the Rain kind of has returned. It just hasn't been a lot yet.
Yeah, but it's cool, too. You know? And thank God we're not in Northern California.
I had an opportunity to drive through the gorge Monday. And, yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot of things burned there, all right. But, you know, other than the fact that it's, you know, it was human-caused and that it was, well, likely anyway, and that it burned a few buildings. You know, nobody was killed, fortunately. But it's just part of the normal cycle. You know, fire, growth, big trees, fire. So in some respects, I'm kind of anxious or pleased maybe to see the, looking forward to the regrowth, just like what happened around St. Helens.
Yeah, well, you know, the fact that it was, you know, it's a pretty iconic place, and, you know, it was depressing to see some of the damage, and it came very close to a piece of property that I own in Hood River, and the west side of the Hood River Valley. It was a level 2 evacuation order, and, you know, these people in California, I mean, it's just terrible. Just looking at pictures of a whole, it's like Beaverton burning or something. You know, how can you even handle that? I mean, an entire neighborhood.
We think we have it in our minds that we are, you know, technology can conquer all.
Yeah. And once in a while, we find out that's not the case.
Right. Yeah. So, like I said, we almost always exclusively talk about the edibles, but we do wander.
Momentarily. The rain is a good wandering point because, you know, this is Oregon, and I'm glad to see it. I mean, we have cover crops that are growing now. You know, the vetch is coming up. I see it growing.
Yes.
It's happy to get some water.
Right, finally.
So. Yeah.
Well, we've got another good show, packed show. As usual, we'll start out talking about the All About Fruit show, which is now 10 days away.
Coming up. Yep.
That's the October 21 and 2, Saturday, Sunday. Mm-hmm. We'll get into that. Jim will talk about pineapple guava. We'll have a discussion on chipper shredders. And we will see how that ties into our music selections today. Jim has been traveling. Oh, what a surprise. And we'll talk about what he's found in the line of jujubes and pineapple guava, I believe. And also what's happening on the farm. Okay, All About Fruit Show coming up first.
Yeah, it's an exciting event, and I just can't think of something more interesting for somebody who's interested in fruit. It's a bit of a drive. You got to go out to Canby, but it's a beautiful area. You can drive along the Willamette River on Highway 99, and it's almost like driving through a park and get to Canby, and at the Canby Fairgrounds, you can park for free. Show was not expensive, like it's $5, I think, admission.
For $10 members.
$10 a family. So,
or free if you join.
Join the Home Orchard Society, and then you really are in. And then you get to see hundreds, if not thousands, of varieties of pears and apples and kiwis and grapes and all sorts of stuff that you can taste. You can think about what you might like to put in your yard for the future, what kind of varieties interest you. Plus, there's all sorts of neat people to hang out with. There's the One Green World has a booth there selling plants. There's a really cool guy that sharpens tools.
Lowell Cordes, it says here, the tool man.
Yep, he'll take care of your tools for you or even sell you some tools if you want some nice pair of pruners or something for your own orchard.
There's also here, Home Orchard Society Arboretum will have fruit for sale.
Uh-huh, good.
There.
Yes, right. Yep.
Let's see. Also, we've got a make a tree table where you can, if you taste a variety of fruit that you like and don't have the time or the knowledge, you
take some tree powder and add a little water to it.
And to graft your own tree, you can hire the Home Orchard Society to do it for, is it still $5?
I don't know, but it's not expensive. And
$5 to $10 bucks at max.
Right.
There's also a. Well, where I will be is at the information, if you want to know what goes where or on to what and things like that.
Or when where Glenn gets his great musical playlist.
No, and also you've got the identification corner where if you have an apple from your Aunt Millie's homestead in the Clackamas Valley. Is there a Clackamas Valley?
I don't think, well, not identified as such.
No. Up the Clackamas River up ways.
Sure.
And you don't know what kind of tree it is. We've got experts there who have devoted much of their lives to learning about
They lay awake trees at night there. Thinking about what right. that variety that is.
And here's the guidelines for successful apple identification. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Bring 5 or 6 good samples from each tree. Do not wash or polish the fruit. Mm-hmm. Leave the stem on the apple. Bring a few leaf samples. Make a map with the tree location. Keep your samples in the fridge if it will be more than a few days before picking time and show time. Make a note of the date of picking. And it's helpful if you have information about the age of the tree. For example, was the house built in the 1970s and the tree planted at that time? Is it an old orchard that was planted in the early 1900s? These are questions and answers needed to put the tree in its correct era.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I wish I had one that needed identification.
Yeah, I don't have any more.
Yeah. I believe I mentioned this before, but it hasn't been for several years, that Brother Brian and Eugene, his kids went to a neighborhood school kind of on the outskirts of Eugene. And it's a pretty good-sized playground area, and along the perimeter were some seedling apples. And one, a yellow apple, that would stay tasty till into November. And so don't know if, at least I'm assuming it's a seedling apple since it's on the perimeter. But I've grafted a couple of trees from Scion Wood on that, and it is a tasty apple, but I don't know what it is. So I guess I could take that one in sometime.
Sure. You know, you could also take in something that you know what it is and test them.
Ooh. That's right.
We'll see what comes out of that one.
All right.
And then speakers, too.
Sorry to say that. And who's up first here? 11 o'clock on Saturday.
It's somebody we all know.
And yours truly.
Yep.
We'll be talking honeybees in the orchard.
Yeah.
I'll come up with something.
Yeah, I'm sure you will.
At 12:30, Jim Oliphant. Mm-hmm. Small fruit in the orchard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what they mean there is small on purpose.
Like?
Not just your apples that are small.
No, I think they mean like berries maybe.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But and in the orchard, I wonder what that means.
Well,
small fruit in the orchard.
Yeah, probably like, in the home orchard since it's the Home Orchard Society.
Well, that could be. And at 2, Joseph Postman, new apples, pears, and quince.
Yeah, can't miss Joseph. He's good.
Is he currently or formerly associated with the germplasm repository?
He's hardcore. He is hardcore germplasm repository.
Okay, he still is. Yeah, all
definitely.
Right. Didn't know if he'd retired or not.
No.
Then at 11 o'clock was going to be Jim, but Jim has arranged somebody from Phil from Green World to talk about unique fruit varieties for the Pacific Northwest.
Yep. Phil's going to know all about that.
Yep. And then 12:30, John Saltveit, who's been a guest here. And in fact, he sometimes fills in for Jim when Jim's gone.
Well.
Yeah, he'll be talking about mixing other edibles in your orchard. And John he's kind of fearless. He doesn't mind experimenting with stuff and knowing full well that they could fail, but he oftentimes has great successes.
Mm-hmm.
Grafting certain things to different rootstocks and trying different fruits and cramming them all into his yard. So.
Yeah. Good. I think it's going to be a great event, and if you can go for 2 days, you'll get twice as much out of it.
I wonder if you could for one the price of one. Tell them Glenn sent you.
That's right, or Jim.
Oh, Jim, right. Well, they said on the dirt bag that the admission is good for both days.
Really?
I bet no. That's what we're just saying right now.
Right. Well, we're getting trouble, Glenn.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good cause anyway. You know, if you got to pay an extra $5, you know,
that's true.
It's a really good cause.
That's true. Okay. Well, let's move on then to our POTM, as we say around here, the plant of the month.
Sure.
Pineapple guava.
Pineapple guava.
I know where I've got some bees at some neighbors a mile away, and they have pineapple guava, and it took a hit, the plant, during the last cold.
Hmm. Like what? How bad it hit?
Well, it lost many leaves,
yeah.
And I'm not sure if the fruit was there at all this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, pineapple guava, in our experience, is reliably hardy to hardy. I mean, in terms of the plant survives down to around 5 degrees. If it gets colder than that, it may die back and come up from the roots. And that happened only once to us in 1989-90 when it got to zero at the farm. Uh-huh.
Well, I don't think the plant died. It just
lost some leaves. Generally speaking, it's a perfectly hardy plant for our area. And I think it's one of the nicest ornamental shrubs you can plant. I mean, it's evergreen, has really striking flowers, and the flowers, petals, are edible. And in fact, one of these years, I keep telling myself, I'm going to collect the flower petals and dry them. And in fact, I saw somewhere something made from them, but they're sweet. They're really nice to eat.
At all ages, or younger is better?
When they're blooming, when they're in bloom.
Oh, the petals. Excuse me. I was thinking of leaves.
No, yeah. Petals.
Okay.
Petals. I think you could dry them and have dried flower petals to eat as a snack because they're really sweet. And interesting little factoid about pineapple guava in its native range in Brazil, it is pollinated by birds that eat the flower petals. So that's how pollination occurs. And interestingly, with pineapple guava, as hopefully some of the listeners are familiar with it, but it's, as I said, it's a beautiful evergreen shrub. It's native to Brazil. But as happened with the kiwi, it was the New Zealanders that did all of the significant amount of breeding work with it and created varieties. So I went to New Zealand last spring. I'm going to go again this coming spring, which is going to be their fall, and taste and talk to people about pineapple guavas. It's really amazing what they've done with them there, and they've got a lot of new varieties. And I was recently in L.A., Los Angeles, where there's another pineapple guava enthusiast, and we were visiting various yards in which where the plants are, checking out some of these new varieties from New Zealand.
Hmm. Well, how do they get pollinated here in Portland?
Well, it's interesting. There are some varieties that are self-fertile that appear not to require pollination. There may be birds that eat on them. We've actually seen that happen at our place. Some chickadees come and eat some petals. There's some bug pollination, I'm sure, that occurs. The pollination seems to happen. It perhaps would be better if there were more birds, and I'm trying to figure out how to train them to do that. But I haven't found a bird keeper yet.
They do, assuming that it does get pollinated, then we do get fruit?
We get fruit, yeah. And I've got a picture somewhere of fruit with snow on it because it can ripen, it can stay on the bush until, unless there's a really hard frost, it'll just hang there. Eventually will fall off, but I think it's a wonderful eating fruit. It's very sweet on the inside, kind of with a minty-like flavor. And the outside, I eat the whole thing typically, sort of like a big egg. Outside's more tart, but really, really, really tasty. And it's funny, I love the English, when saying this and using the English language to say the word pineapple guava, it is neither a pineapple nor a guava. That's a way to say a double negative. Which is kind of fun, so it's kind of its own species. There are one or two relatives, but it's not related to any other fruit that we know of.
Is the fruit ripe now?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, ripening, depending upon what variety and where you live.
Because it hasn't snowed yet.
That's right. Wait for snow, and then we get ripe fruit. I could wait some time for that, hopefully. But if it's not ripe yet, it is ripe. It is in the process of ripening, for sure.
All right. And full sun?
Loves full sun. Yeah. It's quite drought resistant, but if you I have plants at the farm we don't water, but for good growth and for best fruit crops, it's good to water it.
Uh-huh.
Good deep watering once a week will keep it happy and growing well. It doesn't get too big in our climate. The biggest ones I've seen have maybe been 8 to 10 feet tall. That's a pretty good size, and that's after many years.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which is in line with what my hive host has.
And no pest or disease problems.
Yeah. Okay. Pineapple guava.
Yeah. Should be planted more widely. Another name for it is feijoa. Some people may know that name.
Okay.
From, I think, had spent some time in New Zealand.
Occurred to me while you were talking about that, in that my normal source tree for persimmon is completely void of fruit this year.
Hmm.
That hasn't been your... I don't think my neighbor has harvested them all. mean, normally there's thousands.
Really?
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
I don't know if there was any.
Huh.
I should check the other tree that I know around.
Yeah.
And see what the production there is.
We have lots of persimmons on our trees. I'm hoping we almost had a frost day before yesterday. I mean, it was down to 32, and there was a tiny bit of ice and little pockets of grass. And I thought, oh my God, I don't want a frost yet because we're still ripening the persimmons too.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
Pineapple guava. All right. Well, I'm going to set up our musical selections today because I'm going to be talking about chipper shredders. So do you see where this is going, anybody?
I can only imagine, Glenn.
Well, there's a certain style of guitar playing called shredding, and I'm going to look at the roots of that, maybe. What do we have up first here? Oh, yeah, Good Rockin' Tonight. This is from the first album of Montrose. Have you ever heard of Montrose?
No.
No, nobody's heard of Montrose. This is from about 1973. And Ronnie Montrose was the guitarist, and I'm going to let you listen to this, and then this will be a bonus garden stumper, if you can tell me who the lead vocalist was at this time. He went on to become very famous, but he was an unknown at this time when he started with this group, Montrose. So this is Good Rockin' Tonight. Yeah?
You're going to have people have like a phone number? They're gonna
I suppose that we should do that, and we should do that for garden questions too, should we not? If you have any... Please, 503-231-8187. Meanwhile, we'll listen to Good Rockin' Tonight. Okay, well, we're rocking.
Well, I don't know what that has to do with chipping or shredding, but I sure loved it.
Yeah, shredding. Guitar shredding there. Ronnie Montrose. Okay, Jill thinks she knows this singer. Is that right? We'll get to Jill.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jill, you know?
Yeah, Sammy Hagar.
Yes. Very good.
Only because I was sitting by the phone and we're listening, and my boyfriend said, I was there. I saw it.
Well, I understand.
Winterland in San Francisco.
Oh, wow. Well, if you're of the generation, or at least your boyfriend is.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Yeah, I are.
Yeah. Well, I understand he was called Sam Hagar at that time, too, even. But, yeah, Sammy Hagar went on to Van Halen and solo career and the Red Rocker. All right. Good job, Jill.
Thank you.
And as normal, no prize. Okay. Back to the phones. Edie? You're with the Dirtbag.
Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
So last week I was...
Oh, now we can't hear you.
There's other noise in the background.
Okay, now you're back on. Go ahead. Maybe start again, though.
I'm hearing a lot of background noise.
Turn down your radio.
I don't have a radio.
Okay, well, you're coming through crystal clear over the air.
Oh, good, good. I was just confused because I didn't know if I was talking over someone else.
Nope, you're on.
So last week I was walking in southeast Portland, and on a fence post, there was a line of fruit and a sign saying, Free Pawpaw, P-A-W-P-A-W. And I absolutely love it. Fantastic. I've never seen or heard of it before. I mean, in maybe Southern books, you know, in a novel or something. But
yeah.
I'm wondering how come I don't see it in the fruit folks, and if I can buy some pawpaw trees and how to take care of them here in Portland.
Well, you certainly can, and Jim will tell you all about that. The limitation is that you need two trees, and they get, you know, they're a fruit tree, so they can get pretty good size. So it's just you have to have the space for it.
Yeah. Oh, well, it was a teeny yard. The trees were not bigger than maybe 8 feet tall.
Yeah, right now.
Yeah, that's a good size for them, though. I mean, you can keep them pruned down. They're not real fast growers in our climate. They're native to the East Coast and the Midwest, where it gets a lot warmer, especially at night. So here they actually stay pretty good size. I mean, you know, maybe a really old tree could get up to 12, 15 feet.
My hive host that has the pineapple guava, he's got the pawpaws in there.
15 feet?
Yeah.
But
they're fantastic. I mean, they have a complete protein, more than, you know, better than any other plant-based whole, all the amino acids, and other than citrus, more vitamin C, more potassium than potatoes. I mean, they're just
a superfood.
I never knew so much about them.
Well,
so where do I find them? I don't remember seeing them at Portland Nursery.
Well, you'd have to go to a specialty, you know, store like One Green World.
Yeah, One Green World has them because we grow them, and they're one of our favorite, you know, fruiting trees. And you know, they're pretty nice plants for our area because they don't have pest or disease problems.
And the other thing is
dogs don't like them.
Which where in southeast Portland was this? No, don't say over the air because they're one of my favorites.
I think you're having a problem with my dogwood tree in the background.
Yeah, could be. So
okay,
very good.
So One Green World is where I might find them, and I want to keep them from growing too tall. You think the weather might just keep them from growing too tall? I have to have two of them. Can I prune them to keep them short, or will that interfere with their
Definitely prune them. But you won't have to do that for a while. They're slow growing, so I would say, you know, the first 3 or 4 years, you won't do any pruning at all, unless there was a broken branch or something. Just let them grow, and they'll start blooming, and you should be getting fruit.
Jim, are the pawpaws grafted?
Yes.
And what does the rootstock do for it?
Well, we use pawpaw seedling rootstock, so there's no particular rootstock effect. It's like having a pawpaw tree, except it has a seedling, but it has a grafted top on it.
Why would one do that? Because it's easier to start a tree that way?
Well, because then you get the big fruit and the better quality fruit, but just like grafting an apple, so we have varieties of pawpaw.
Well, but can you just... It's not like fig or grape where you just stick into the ground and it grows.
Yeah, they don't root, sadly.
So if you like, I have my hive host guy, Charles. I don't just say Charles. Mm-hmm. He gave me a seedling. No, not a seedling, a sucker one.
Uh huh.
And so now it's into its second year.
Right.
I mean, we've talked about that, but
it will be the sucker will be the rootstock where it came from would have been a seedling. It won't be a variety.
Well, then why am I growing it?
Good question.
Yeah.
You probably should graft it with a good variety.
Yeah. I'll have to ask him about that.
Yeah. I mean,
it depends where it came off. If he yanked it from nowhere. They don't send out suckers that he would pull one off of.
Not of a variety.
Would one graft it the same way?
So you
okay,
just...
Well, I'm going to hang up.
Yeah, sorry. We appreciate your call.
Yeah. You would treat them just the same. Just imagine an apple. Same idea. Think of that rootstock, that sucker that he took off would be a rootstock, and then you would graft the superior variety on the rootstock. Same as an apple.
Yeah, okay. All righty. Well, let's get into our discussion of chipper shredders, unless there's more calls for... We've got a couple more selections of shredders. 503-231-8187. And Jim, you said that you've only had really experience with the commercial grade shredders.
Yeah, some years ago there was some benefit, some grant, I believe, from a government agency in Oregon that allowed you to get away from burning and to get some discount on chippers. And so we got a nice chipper we put on the back of one of our larger tractors. Is it
a PTO from the tractor?
PTO from the tractor, okay. Right. And it does a great job. I mean, we hardly do any burning anymore of debris. We just chip it up and put it back in the field and improve our soil.
Well, yesterday I used my chipper shredder, and I might have had part of the same benefit. You know, it's a pretty good tax credit is what it was.
Yes.
And so I probably got a bigger one than I would have gotten otherwise. You know, it was $1,000 or something, and ended up being $500 or something like that. And this was years ago, and right off the bat, I was started shredding belts on it.
Oh, really?
You know, so I took it back, you know, twice or maybe three times. And the third time, I'm still using those same belts now, and this is a decade ago. So that's one thing that what you have to be careful about. And there's electric ones, which might be good for shredding leaves and very small stuff. But if you're going to be shredding any type of tree prunings, then you probably need a gas one, which can handle bigger. Now, my one, which is a Bearcat.
Bearcat, right.
And actually, I went back to the place for some reason where I got it, and they weren't carrying them anymore, and I asked why. I said, well, they had a habit of shredding belts. Yeah, well, now you tell me. But mine's been working very well since then. And the gas ones are powerful, and as I started to say, mine says you could chip up to 3 inches or something like that. Nah, I wouldn't get any. I wouldn't even try anything over 3/4 of an inch. Hmm. I mean, it might do that. And oftentimes they say chipper shredders because they have two different mechanisms, all running on one flywheel that's just moving around. It's heavy. Once it gets going, then it can withstand this major pressure that you're putting on it from putting in a load. The chipper part is a blade, or it's more like, imagine in the kitchen, your Cuisinart. You have a Cuisinart, Jim?
Similar.
Tammy, you have a Cuisinart? Yeah. Yeah. And there's a blade, an attachment that slices. And what does that look like? It's solid, except that it has a raised blade. So when you put your carrot through, every time it comes around, it slices off more. That's what the chipper part of a chipper shredder is. So it actually has, most of the time, it has another opening, even where you can put in bigger branches. Mm-hmm. Now, part of my problem is that I probably need to sharpen that blade so it could take more. A bigger one.
It could be, yeah. Right,
yeah.
Right. Butter knives are not...
Yeah, right. It just blunts its way through there. Now, the shredder part has on a rotating axis are metal fingers that are loose. Maybe there's three sets of them, a third of the way around. And when you feed it, that just gnaws on it shreds the stuff up until it's small enough to go out through the openings on the grate that you've put in place. There are different sizes of grates that you can get. I have just the standard one, which is about 1-inch holes. So it just keeps shredding stuff in there until it gets small enough and can fly out this grate. And it works very well if the material is dry. But if you're trying to put, imagine iris leaves or gladiola leaves or anything stringy like that, and it just clogs it up. Or if you have real fresh grape prunings or something like that. It just clogs it up. But you can get other grates that are designed for that, and they're not so much round. They're elongated, maybe 3 inches, curved in the shape of a banana, if you will. And they're not necessarily cheap, but you can get a very decent one, I think, for $400 or $500, and which sounds like a lot, but if you're in the market for any piece of power equipment, I would say don't go for a rototiller. Go for the chipper shredder. I haven't used my rototiller in decades.
Hmm.
Well, 2 decades anyway.
Hmm.
Just because I don't need to, but I use the shredder a dozen times a year or more, including yesterday before it rained.
So I have a tip for listeners, because I'm actually, after the show, going to this company to get chipper blades sharpened.
Oh, great.
And it's called Messenger. It's an old Portland business, and we need to support
our
local business.
It's called what?
The name is Messenger, Messenger, Knife and Grinding Company. And it's on, the address is 834 Southeast Mill Street, close in Southeast. And they've been there for a long, long time. They do a great job. They'll sharpen your chipper blades. They'll sharpen mower blades.
Did you take the blades off, or did you just bring in the whole chipper?
It's a very big chipper.
Yeah. No wonder it took a long time. Yeah. You were pulling it behind your tractor.
Right, behind my bicycle. We take the blades off. You want to remove the blades, but
okay.
Take them in there, and you can get your blade sharpened. And I think it's a really good place. I mean, they do a nice job.
Yeah.
And,
well, it's good to support local.
That's right.
Businesses too. Okay, Messenger.
Messenger Knife and Grinding.
Okay, in Southeast.
Southeast, yeah, just right down the street.
So what I tend to do is somewhat because of just a lack of time, but also just because it works better, is I will stack things up to let them dry. So I'm pruning my pears through the summer, just because they're in the way, my espaliered pears. Mm-hmm. And I'll just stack them up, let them dry out, and then shred them up like I did yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty satisfying.
Yep.
You know, you see this just pile of stuff where, well, what am I going to do with this? And there it is. You can use it in your compost or use it as a mulch.
Yeah, it is a really good tool. I agree with you that it's a valuable one to have if you have any kind of
and if you
space.
I think this is a good pep talk, Jim, that the motor engine wouldn't have to work nearly as hard as if I got them sharpened. So
yeah,
I'll figure out how to take out that blade.
Yeah,
I haven't done that yet.
It's probably pretty easy for you've had this the chipper for how many years now?
15 to 20.
Oh yeah, I think it's time, Glenn.
I have reversed the flails. Mm. These are these little flails that you can, only one end is really, there's a hole in the middle, and so you can reverse them.
Sure.
And
well, maybe the next show you can give us a report on the success of your removal of the blades and getting them sharpened.
Let's see if I have all my fingers left.
Well, don't start the engine before you take the blades off.
Is this how this works?
And that's one thing probably we should also mention is be safe with these things, because you want to be careful when you're operating one. You want ear protection.
And eye protection.
And eye protection.
Yeah.
And just be careful, because they're
powerful. Know, one of the issues with my chipper shredder is that it I sometimes have to force the stuff in there, and I think sharpening it would help because it would pull itself in there. Mm-hmm. But does yours have a feed on it?
Yes.
You know, a small.
It does have a little rotating drum that will push things in.
Yeah, yeah, and that would be very beneficial.
Right.
But you don't have those with the home ones.
It's home ones, no. And it's if you're only doing a small yard's worth of chipping, you can push it in fine.
Oh sure. But it's you don't want to do one pruning at a time, because that takes a long time,
Well, that's right. You'd probably bother your neighbors too, starting the thing up every couple hours.
Yeah. Okay. So that's they're worth having. Yeah. If your budget can do it. And
it's the kind of tool that really it would be neat if you could get together with some other folks and that you trusted and share one, because
that's a very good idea there.
Yeah. And we even were dreaming before the show started about, wouldn't it be nice if there was some company that would just sort of drive from house to house and shred your stuff for you?
Yeah.
Especially
after an ice storm, but.
Yeah. Every fall.
Right. Every fall. Yeah. Right. Because leaves do better when they're dry too. So. All right. Well, let's get to one more shredder. Some people will argue that Jimmy Page was the original shredder. That's Led Zepp. So we'll hear just a little bit of Heartbreaker. I don't know if you can skip ahead to about the 2 minute mark on. Tammy says, I don't know that I can do that, but that's when his shred guitar solo starts. But anyway, this is Heartbreaker from the second Led Zepp album. Almost up. There we are.
He's probably keeping his blaze really sharp.
Yes. Good point. Yeah, well, Led Zeppelin.
Glenn's music show, also the Dirtbag.
Yes. All right, but it's time for the Garden Stumper. Well, remember now, this is from the 1980s when we, for this, the answer to this question here. What plant was used in Oregon's first field test of a genetically engineered crop? So this is the 1980s.
Wow.
Oregon's first field test of a genetically engineered crop. All right, if you know the answer to that, or if you have a gardening question, 503-231-8187. Meanwhile, Jim has been on the road down to New Mexico.
Great, really,
Los Angeles.
Yeah, crazy trip. 6 days, and we went to Alcalde, New Mexico, where the only, as far as we know, the only collection in the United States of jujube varieties.
Where is that in New Mexico? Give us an idea.
Kind of near Taos in Santa Fe, up a little north.
Okay.
About 6,000 foot elevation.
Wow.
Yeah. And we it was a wonderful trip. We met a woman there, a Chinese woman, who'd collected, brought a lot of varieties from China.
Is that where jujubes are native to?
China.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so she had a number of interesting varieties. We got there in time for a taste testing of a bunch of them, walked through the orchard. And this is a crop that, you know, not well known in the U.S., jujube. So it's New Mexico State University has the sponsoring this collection.
Is the emphasis on the first Jew?
Jujube.
Jujube, not jujube. Jujube.
I say jujube.
Jujube. All right.
Yeah. Anyway, there's also a candy by that name, and maybe that, you know, most people know that. Oh. I have no idea why they have the same name, but the fruit is not like the candy.
Okay.
But it's a really interesting fruit, and we're hoping to have some new varieties eventually from this journey. What was also interesting for us in New Mexico, I hadn't been there in many, 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 many years, but I went to Taos. And Taos is a really interesting small town, which has a lot of history. There's the Taos Pueblo, which is this one of the longest lived-in places in North America. And just a really neat culture, Spanish culture, Native American culture. A lot of artists live there, but it's not Disneyland type place. It's like, it's kind of real, and we enjoyed it. And then for me, which was really, I scratched my head because I remembered back in the day, there was a commune, big commune in that area. And it took me a little while to remember the name. It was New Buffalo. So some of the old timers who are listening might remember this commune, but I never went there, but I knew people that did, and it's kind of interesting place. And then from Taos or from New Mexico, we went to Los Angeles, where we walked around. I was mentioning earlier about walking around in yards where pineapple guava were growing. This friend of ours had brought these varieties from New Zealand and planted them in yards of houses that he had bought over the years and has rented out. That was, of course, what's great, very interesting to see the pineapple guavas. We also met Margaret Frane, F-R-A-N-E, who's the president of the California Rare Fruit Growers, also a pineapple guava enthusiast. And while we were in one yard, we just had asked our friend, well, so you're renting this house. It's just kind of an ordinary single-story stucco house, probably built in the 1930s, nothing special about it, you know, sort of in Santa Monica, 26 blocks from the beach. And we said, just out of curiosity, how much do you charge to rent this house? $4,550 a month.
Wow.
So that was kind of like jaw-dropping. But like I said, we really had a good time tasting all these different varieties of pineapple guava, and some of which we are growing now at the nursery, and we'll hopefully bring them to the Northwest.
Did you bring any cuttings back?
Well, we want to do the cuttings a little bit later, probably in late January, early February, when we can graft them onto our rootstock and get some plants going. It's a little early right now for them. But,
all right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's amazing. You can travel overseas and you can travel in the U.S. and you can find fun things to check out.
We've got a call. Good morning, Paul. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hey, I'm going to throw out sugar beet.
That's a very good guess, but it's not the right answer this time.
It's not it? All right.
No. Hey, yeah, it was. They do. I know they grow those here, or they experimented with them. Yeah. In fact, when I was a kid, I wasn't a kid. When I was a teenager, I worked on a truck farm, and one of the things that they grew were sugar beets, sugar beet for seed.
Yes.
But they were not genetically modified in the early 70s. It was very hard. Right. It was very hard to move pipe through that because they were very stringy.
Yeah, they're really crazy looking plants.
And they can get 4 or 5 feet long.
Need to be tall.
All right. Good try, Paul.
Hey, thanks, Greg.
Yep. All right. Well, let's do our last shred here.
Okay.
And then we'll come back and find out what's on the farm.
Okay.
All right. This is Deep Purple. Richie Blackmore was the guitarist, and he did a fair amount of shredding too. And this is the title track from their, I think it was 1974 album, Burn. Mm-hmm. All right, that's enough of Deep Purple. Used to listen to that album a lot.
I love coming to this show. Broaden my horizons, Glenn.
That's what we try to do. Not only that. Speaking of horizons, what's going on the farm?
Well, I was thinking about what, as the music was going on, one of the fun things in our little place out between Malala and Canby is our international connections. And right now we have a visitor from Uzbekistan, Aziz, who's visited us several times, and he's sadly going to be leaving in a few days, but he's been helping me do some special projects, including harvesting and labeling persimmons from our persimmon collection, which is starting to ripen. And we've been, I think I might have mentioned on a previous show about how you can take an astringent persimmon and while it's firm and treat it with carbon dioxide gas remove the astringency, but still have a firm but edible persimmon. So we've just started doing those experiments again, and we have a new Korean variety that ripens really early, so we tried it with it, and it turned out delicious, really good.
So you have a chamber that has carbon dioxide in it, or?
Yeah, the chamber is pretty simple. It's a plastic bag.
Oh, and, I've heard of those.
Yeah, a plastic bag that seals, and we have a CO2 tank. We've got it at a brewing supply place here in Portland. And so we put a tube into the plastic bag and displace the oxygen in it with the carbon dioxide, seal it, and leave it in a room at 70 degrees for 24 hours.
Hmm.
Interestingly, so we have a lot of American persimmon, which I think are really super interesting fruit, really delicious, and they also are astringent. There aren't any American persimmons you can eat when they're firm. So we decided to try some American persimmon, firm ones, with the same treatment.
Yes.
And it didn't work.
Hmm.
And then we read some interesting literature from back in the 70s that talks about how that the same process used for Asian persimmon doesn't work for American. And so, we thought we'd have to try it ourselves, but it didn't work. And so, but we're very bullish about this.
Well, were the persimmons in the American persimmons in the harvestable stage?
Was it
a little bit premature?
Yeah. The interesting thing with American persimmon, when they turn orange, then they turn soft. And so we had to pick them a little bit with a little green in them to pick them firm, because they're a little different that way.
Hmm.
Anyway, it was interesting to see it. We also had two visitors from South Korea just 2 weeks ago. They only came for 3 days, but it's always fun to see them. And a father and son, the father has a nursery there, and we've been working collaboratively with them to get some of these new persimmon varieties into the U.S. And they've been taking some of our varieties to Korea. But it's just a really interesting connection. And Korea has its own world of plants and culture and food. And so we get a little exposure to that too, and found an interesting Korean grocery store in Beaverton. I believe it's called the G Market. And it's just like going to Korea. You can just go there and buy all the stuff. You get flat tofu. I've never seen it. I had never seen it before. Tofu in a sheet.
Like just an eighth of an inch thick, or?
Rolled up real thin. No, real thin. Like paper. Like,
oh.
And so we've tried slicing it up in the rolls and using it as noodles, actually cooking with it. And really quite good.
Huh.
Think of the nutrition with that. And, so this time of year, this is cleanup time at the nursery. So we're doing a lot of work that we couldn't get done during the summer because we were too busy doing a lot of cleaning up branches, chipping, of course.
Right. And you said that you've planted cover crop and some is coming up. I don't think it's too late to plant cover crops.
Nope. Soil is still relatively warm. And so they germinate. We've planted both perennial ryegrass and vetch. Depending upon where we're at, we're making more raised beds for future experiments, and harvesting fruit. I mean, there's so much fruit, apples and pears. And
I know last week, no, month, we talked about harvesting squash, and I think if you haven't harvested your squash, now's the time to do it. Get them out before more rains come
and frost
and colder temperatures.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And let's see, what else am I harvesting? I've left the tomatoes. They're still some tomatoes out there. The cherry tomatoes will continue to ripen. Just an excellent beet year. I think I mentioned that too, but just large beach, you know, larger than two fists, and still sweet.
You know, speaking about planting, Aziz told me an interesting story about Uzbekistan. Whenever he talks a lot about what life is like there and how different things are than here. And so one of his jobs there is he actually sells seeds from Europe to Uzbekistan farmers, Uzbek farmers. And he was telling me about carrot seed and how they separate the carrot seed by size. And the larger seed is more expensive because they plant them one by one with their fingers, the carrot seed. And so they can handle a carrot seed more easily if it's large than a small one.
You know, that just reminds me that I didn't even put in our schedule here, but we've got our dirtbag dictionary term. But it ties right in here, and it's broadcast for broadcast seed or seeding.
Yeah.
And it won't take long at all to talk about this, but it gets to the heart of the matter, what Jim was talking about there. And oftentimes with carrots, or cover crops is what I was really getting for.
Have you ever heard, I mean, here in the Northwest doing this? Because what they actually plant carrots in November in Uzbekistan and harvest them in May, because carrots are really popular there. They use them in their national dish, plof, and it's just that they use lots and lots of carrots.
Well, I've never done that. I'm not sure.
What would happen?
It might be worth a try, but I usually leave carrots in the ground until we're going to have a very, very hard frost. I mean, you know,
right
below 25.
Yeah.
Or hard freeze, but for, let's just take as an example, crimson clover, which is a pretty small seed, maybe the size of a pinhead.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you don't need to plant those in rows. And so all we're doing is, with the broadcast, is kind of putting them in your hand, closing your hand, making a very less tight fist, and the seed just flows out of your... You know, kind of you're talking about, what is this called when you make a little talkie face with your thumb and forefinger, you know? You know, it's coming out of the top of your fist.
Right.
And or through your fingers, whatever. But the idea is we're just tossing it onto the surface of the soil. And really, you don't, I sometimes rake it just lightly to cover it up or put a little bit of compost on top. But, you know, when we have weather like this, they'll just germinate even on the soil.
Mm-hmm. When I first learned how to do that many, many years ago, and I remember how much fun it was and how it seemed like something maybe that people had been doing for thousands of years, of holding these seeds in their hand and letting them sort of flow out as you swing your hand back and forth. It's a really nice sort of methodical, meditative process. You
know? Of course, mine's areas that I'm broadcast seed are pretty small, so you know I don't really have an opportunity to throw it as such. Yes, but
right,
that it's surprising that you can distribute the seeds pretty evenly.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always, in my case, there's always clumps
that are
coming up.
That's an interesting process.
I used to do that with carrots. You were speaking of that, but now I draw rows lines with a hoe and just sprinkle in the seeds. I'm not planting each one individually, but I found that it's just a lot easier to weed and to thin the carrots when they're in a row.
Yep.
You
know,
and they're just a blanket. It's just too hard.
Well, after I heard this story from Aziz, I actually went on Johnny's website,
Johnny's
Seed website, and ordered a little device. I can't remember what they call it right now, but it was a little electric device that helps you plant individual seeds. And it's like a little trowel, it looked like.
A dibble or something. I'm not sure if that's what it was called.
It's a vibrator. It vibrates a little bit.
Oh,
it has a battery in it. And so I'm going to give it to him for a present to take back to Uzbekistan to see if it revolutionizes the planting of carrots.
Oh, hopefully it'll get here soon.
Yeah, tomorrow it's supposed to be.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. You planned. Okay. Well, I did harvest my squash this year, and then I've planted in that bed. I think the cucumbers are pretty much done, but I still got some zucchini coming on.
Yeah.
And no tree fruits that I have are left on the tree.
Really?
Yeah.
So as we have late apples yet, they're still hanging on. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't a good year the first year in many, I did not bag any apples.
Mm.
And that's I will never not bag again because the coddling moth, or the apple maggot, the one that tunnels through the apple, was rampant. I thought it was good to begin with. I didn't see much, but then
that's too bad.
I don't think any apple was unscathed.
You know, we don't have that out where we are.
Yeah, well, so, don't let me visit you with apples.
Don't bring any apples, please.
Yeah. So you're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, because.
Well, so the bagging, what do you use for bagging?
Just a paper bag, a sandwich bag.
Yeah.
And I cut a little slit and at the bottom of the bag, turn it upside down, so the bag. And it's great. Okay. We'll talk more about that when we do that next year, though. So, yeah. Okay. That's it, Jim.
Nice being here, Glenn.
Thank you.
Rock and roll all the way
That's
home.
Right. Well, we won't be shredding next month. We don't know what we're going to be doing. All right. This is Glenn Andreessen. Thanks for listening. That's my story. So. I got a spade and a big axe and 100 miles square of land to turn about.
It's noon here at KBOO Portland. Time for the KBOO Noon News. Stay tuned for jazz.